I am Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God in AA since the 10th of December, 1967. For that, I'm very grateful. It's been a nice weekend. I did not want to come. We came back from Mexico and came here the day after we got home. And we flew through Atlanta, believe it or not. We were going to fly through L.A., and we should have packed a second suitcase and just stayed on Tuesday. It would have been better. But there's been a sweet quality to the experience I think Linda and I have had. This conference has always had kind of a sweet quality, but I'm glad, as I find as I get older, I have to hold a shotgun on myself to get myself to goal. But once I'm there, it's wonderful. And it has been that. Thank you, Dick. Thank you, Barbara. Barbara and Linda. So I woke up at 4:30 this morning giving part of my talk. And when I came back to the room after breakfast, my wife is studying Spanish. My wife is part Irish and part German. But the German part, I don't think she has missed 10 days in 8 years of studying Spanish. But since Anderson has picked up doing Duolingo, and she's ahead of Linda, it has spurred Linda on. So it's, and because of all the relationships, I've had a sense of how important, I always know how important my family is. As you get older, your health and family. I mean, so many of the things that mean my business career, you know, it's over. I'm still involved somewhat, but it's over. It's past. And this is what's important to me. You represent literally the core of my being. I have spent 55 years with you. I have spent more time with you doing. I know more about who I am in this room than in any other room in my life. It's an extraordinary statement. I wouldn't have ever thought that possible. So rather than give a talk, I'm going to have a conversation as one of you. I know I'm no more important in this conversation than anybody else in the conversation, but there's pitchers and catchers, and I'm going to do the pitching. I want to read a letter. Why are we here? You know, maintaining our spiritual condition. That's what we're doing. How are we doing? I think we are hard graders of ourselves. I think we underestimate. One of the readings I do, and I'll get into that in a minute, is one of the readings I do is Thomas Merton, who Mildred referred to. And Merton was a Cistercian monk and a convert into Catholicism and a terrific guy. But if you read his daily diary, you'd think he was a drunk. I mean, he was all over the place. He had a wonderful, brilliant, inquisitive mind that brought him places that few people were able to go. So I want to read a letter that was written in 1956 to Mel Barker. Mel Barker was a guy from Cleveland who was sober, I think, the better part of 70 years. I'm not sure. He got sober, I think, in 43 or something like that. No, he got sober about 1950, I think. So he's a relative newcomer who was at a conference where Bill talked. He went to New York to talk to Bill. Bill was too tired to talk to him, but said, write me. So Barger writes a letter, sober a couple of years, and he wants to know about Bill's spiritual awakening, and he wants to know about the difference between the 12 and 12 and the big book. He thought the big book was so much more positive, and that by the time Bill wrote the 12 and 12 in the early 50s, he thought there was a negative thing to it. But what I'm most impressed with, I want you to listen to Bill's response to a newcomer letter. Bill says, I often fail to make the, in talking about my flash of reality. Reality. He said, I often fail to make the point that every AA who has the program gets the same thing. I didn't believe that when I first came in, without question. The only difference that I can see is that most experiences are strung out over a long period of time. In these sudden events, I think the ego gives way to depth of complete collapse, at least momentarily, and this permits a huge inrush of grace that brings a vision. In most cases, the grace leaks in little by little. Therefore, I can't hold that most theologians, that these sudden experiences are something very special or unique. If you were to take the sum of your own transformation since you've been in AA and compress it, the whole business, into 6 minutes, you too would have seen the stars and more. I love that. I love that. And then he goes on to talk a little bit about. And then towards the end of the letter, so I'm going to read about a page. It says, on further point with me, original experience was so prodigious that the view of my destiny so intense that I never had any difficulty or doubts about him at the time. Even at my worst, and that has been damn bad, the sense of the presence of God has never deserted me. That's pulled me through some awfully tight jams. My doubts about myself is an ongoing human concern. Never has there been any question about the ultimate destiny of us all, or God's justice and love. Long ago, I became a pupil of AA all around me. People were doing better with themselves in a spiritual sense than I ever could. In my role as Mr. AA, I've been enabled to manage fairly well. But as one neurotic drunk, trying to get along and grow, I often have been pathetically rebellious and rationalized. Practically all the sins I didn't have time for when I was drinking, I've fallen for since in the last 12 years of life. Despite all my blessings and opportunities, I spent 8 years in depression, a very severe one. However, there's been a profit for even AA in the state of affairs. The depression kept me off the road. And the only place he would talk was for Dr. Bob at Founders Day and for making speeches. In fact, I was forced to sit home and ask what would become of AA, and that would become the result of which was the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and the present world service structure. So maybe I grew a little, you think, myself during this thing. Dr. Bob was made of better stuff. In his personal life, he was always much closer to spiritual achievement than I ever did. He seemed never to be victimized by the awful conflicts, though this was not for sure because he was a real stoic. Unlike me, he was a vast reader. I went through Bob's library with his daughter Sue, of spiritual and psychic literature, and he had, by contrast, my own reading was sparse. I have rather relied more on the observation and conversation. I guess I'm still a shopper at the theological pie counter. Still wondering, to many respects, what it's all about. So my friend, you now have the last bulletin on my own state of grace. I do hope that this helps reduce any overestimate you may have about me. And another thing that I wish the really impossible is that someday the society will let me just be a member. We joke about Bill's ego. He had a core humility that over and over and over again he sacrificed. He and his wife lived in 50 different places in the first 2 years of their sobriety at the start of our fellowship, sleeping on couches and sleeping above the AA clubs. And it was just extraordinary. And do it. So the conversations that we often have, I don't know when the hell I started this thing. The conversations that we have, you know, one of the things we want to know is, how are we doing? And in some ways, it's the wrong question. No, it's the right question, because there are things to do. There are meetings to go to. There are books to read. There are steps to take. But the real transformation, as I spoke briefly about last night, is not about doing. It's about being. Doing comes out of being. There has to be a change in how we be before there's a significant change in what we do. If doing comes before being, it's just copycat. You know, it's me in a very surface way. But each of us, as we continue our participation in Alcoholics Anonymous, we develop a depth of a relationship. I can't get the thing out. So we develop a depth that we didn't have before. And it is extraordinary what happens, the wisdom that we are able to get. Our pathology does not go away. I'm supposed to talk about step 10 and 11, and 10 talks about doing an inventory. So I came in at 23, had my last drink at just barely 24. My gift is I loved AA since the moment I walked in the front door. I mean, there weren't many young people at that time, and there weren't many young people who loved AA from the very moment they walked in the door. What a gift. I love the people. I love the conversation. I found my home. The conversation in Alcoholics Anonymous spoke to my life. The little bit a 23-year-old has in his life, I screwed up. 3 weeks ago, I was at Notre Dame in Indiana. I walked out of Notre Dame middle of my senior year. In the yearbook with my class ring, with 135 credits, I quit. I was done. I was in civil engineering carrying 25 credits a semester going to school. I used to go to school one day a week. That year, I didn't go at all. I didn't even know where my classes were. I could not go. When I told my rector I was leaving, he said, "God, don't leave. You're senior." I was done. And I was due to be commissioned in the Army. I had to get a medical release for alcoholism. I walked out. Can you imagine my parents, who thought they had a winner? I had them convinced it was so difficult. But then my show-off brother came, and he's magna cum laude at Notre Dame. And I was lodged between he and my sister, who did graduate work at the Sorbonne, and I looked at the family asshole, jammed a kind of a crap sandwich. And and later we were to have three sons that were in the program. So you can imagine that we've experienced both sides of that sort of thing. And we've experienced the gratitude, because you don't get your kids sober. You get my kids sober. And the gratitude that I have is beyond mention. So in the 10th step, we're continuing inventory. And we're asking ourselves, we're looking for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Not if it shows up, when it shows up. And when it crops up, we ask God to remove the item at once. We discuss it with someone immediately. We make amends if they're needed, and then we turn our thoughts to help someone, love and tolerance of others. If there ever is a group of people who should have love and tolerance, it's us. We have caused more pain to the people who cared about us than you could imagine. And shame on us. I don't like that word. Wrong. Cross that out. And many of us come into the program feeling like we're victims, which is an interesting response, because we are, we have this trail of damage that we've caused behind us. But the only explanation, happiness is knowing who to blame. We really do not want to take responsibility for what has gone on. And, one of my very favorite things to do in the program was to talk with Sandy Beach. I don't know what the hell's wrong with this phone. Aha. Uh-huh. It was my very favorite thing. I got to be his wingman. It was just the best. And I can remember the chair I was sitting in when Sandy said, anytime you're wrapped around the axle or upset with someone, you either owe them an amend or you need to forgive them. I thought, you know, profound, but way too simple. I have not yet found an exception to that statement, which is a compression of a couple of things in our literature. There comes a time in our maturity and our growth in the program. So when I would do something and no one found out, it was like it was free, like it didn't count if I didn't get caught. But there comes a time, kind of like the state of reason that we talk about in the church, used to talk about in the church, where you start catching yourself. And there's no more free ride. There just comes a time when all of a sudden you start seeing yourself. You start mirror, you know, the mirror is held up. So now instead of having secret interactions in life, what happens to us in our interactions is a mirror is being held up to us. And we start to see ourselves more accurately than we have ever seen ourselves before, and we get a whole new engagement with ourselves. We are unbelievably good at cleaning up the first couple of years of our lives, the marriages, the financial, the job, all the sorts of things that we talk about, which is an enormous change. But once we get those chunks out of the way, and we start maybe the second cut through the steps, and we start doing an inventory. That my first inventory was like a third grade art project that my mother put on the refrigerator. It was not, it was just the worst thing that I had done, and it didn't get to the causes and conditions. I didn't get to the real causes and conditions until my third inventory, which was the best. I was in more pain. It was about 8 years of sobriety. We both kind of just fell apart. I mean, she was just a basket case, as I was. But what was happening is we got through the first layer, and then we were presented with the more sophisticated things. I was sitting in the front row. I attended all sorts of conferences and meetings, listening to guys like John Harris, who tore me apart, and wondering if God would work on my marriage, my checkbook. So for the first 7 or 8 years, I'm not going to get into my story. My mother always said, you're not very bright, Bob. Dress well. So as a result, I've always looked good. But I was a suit. I've always been smart. I've just never been effective, which is a really crappy combination. And I found myself, you know, having trouble getting to work, having trouble staying at work, and having trouble working at work. Other than that, I was a good worker. Everybody knows how to work. When I was walking the campus of Notre Dame, trying to look at this 20-year-old kid, knowing that in my sophomore year, I mentally left school and turned towards the seedy side of South Bend downtown and developed a secret life. Why? What the hell was wrong with you? You were given this wonderful opportunity. You were smart enough to do it. What? And I can't answer that question. I just flat, there is no sense to it. Other than this, I don't know, other than my disease, I guess. But in order to get the full measure, the full recovery, I had to start the practice of inventory. I didn't have the depth at 24 years old to do an inventory that would give me that would put me in touch with the dials that were the causes and conditions of my illness. But at 30 and 31, having been a failed husband, having been almost totally an effective worker. My business partner is sober 59 years. 58 years. What a combination. What are the chances that two guys end up, you know, having 115 years, 114 years of sobriety? That's pretty unusual. And we've been partners 52 years. I live in the same town I was born in. I'm one of seven kids. Six of us are still, the second generation in our family are 46 kids. So it is, they asked us to stop breeding. But relationships are at the core of my life. They're at the core of all our lives. Everything about us is relationship. The practice of inventory, non-neurotic inventory, which is difficult for us because the ego tends to way overdo. The ego does not like inventory. So it tries to stop us. It tries to make it so difficult. It tries to give us a knife that we turn on other people, but we hesitate to turn on ourselves. That's why we have to give up the knife. We have to develop a compassion and an honesty and a love in order to face and share, face the things that the mirror is holding up to us in the early middle years of sobriety. We can't have the knife. It doesn't belong. So, forgiveness and love. The program, more than anything else, is the movement towards love. I mean, that's the answer. If you want to know how you're doing, am I moving more towards love? It is, and you have, as they say, I thank you for my marriage and I thank you for my parenting, that I've been moving towards love. I do it imperfectly, but I do it better and deeper and more often than I ever have at any other point in my life. So I'd like us to keep in mind that any time we're upset, that we either owe an amend or we need to forgive. And the amend part was so much part of our culture, I knew that. The forgiveness part, when he stated that, blew me away. And I believe that forgiveness is one of the most powerful, necessary, pregnant possibilities that we have in our program. And that it brings more peace to us than anything else we could do. The other thing that brings more peace to us than anything else we can do is prayer and meditation. We talk an awful lot about the promises after step 8 and 9. I want to read the promises after step 10, which to me they're just the best. And I also want you to listen about who we think is doing this. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We find that this has happened automatically. Does that sound like I'm doing it? We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. I mean, holy buckets. I mean, that the problem has been removed. And that is, I think in some ways, you know, I said last night when you asked someone to come up and tell us how you did it, you know, Lois and Bill throughout their entire lives talked about when Bill experienced his release from alcohol. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor afraid. We have this. That's our experience. This is how we react. As long as we keep ourselves in fit spiritual condition, we're granted a reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So we're in this process trying to maintain our spiritual condition, and we need to get rid of what's in our way. We're taking a trip. And important on the trip is remember your passport. Bring money. You know, bring your driver's license. Do all the different things that you do. And we're taking a trip. And we need to surrender. to open the door. We need to take responsibility for our lives. And even though I was this tornado, young tornado, going through the life of my family, I felt like a victim. I felt like, I had these stories that I added to almost all the damage that we have in our lives right now. All the mischief in our lives is because of the story we add to the circumstances we find ourselves in. Not the circumstances. The story that we paste on our eyeball, and it becomes our reality. And as people have talked about quite a bit this weekend, is a lot of those, the instigation of that is in the subconscious. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't have to make sense. And there's no preparation. When something comes from your subconscious and it's on your eyeball, you're in it without an invitation. You're just in it up to your neck. And that emotional content, you start developing the story that supports that. You in that circumstance, and all of a sudden you can find yourself in a whirlpool going down the drain. And thank God, because emotion dominates intellect. Your emotional content gets up over 5, your IQ drops in half. Okay. But spirit orders emotion. And without us even knowing it, time and again, we listen to people at meetings talk about problems with their kids and wives and jobs and life, and we start getting examples about how to be. And maybe what to do, but mostly how to be in the circumstances that we find ourselves. So we are now through 8 and 9. It used to be that people had trouble with 4 and 5. We had some of the old timers didn't do 4 and 5. They did it a piece at a time. And that towel thing that you talked about, which is Clancy giving it to Peggy, tearing the towel out and throwing it in, a piece at a time. Senior moment. I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. So 8 and 9 are the steps that people tend to ignore today, avoid. They're so intimidating. When I grew up, or when I got taller, you couldn't get in as much trouble financially as you can get into today. We gave our son a credit card, little asshole, and he had about a $3,000 limit, I think, and he got it up to $60,000. American Express allowed him to change the credit. And I'll tell you, that was a tough bill for me to pay. I almost requested or went through a process to not have to do that because we didn't sign off on the $60,000, but we paid it. Still waiting for an amend on that, I think. The amend that we have is what a wonderful man he is. Has been paid back to us many times. But young people today have gotten in so much financial trouble that they just look at it and they think it's an impossibility to deal with. Little do they know the power of the program. Little do they know the power of God. And little do we know about negotiation and all the sorts of things that you can do in that process. But the booster rocket are the 8th and 9th step. It is the completion of the work. And it is the most powerful engine that we have. The transformative experience from 4 to 9, from a resentment list, and most of the people on your resentment list end up on your amends list, that is a spiritual journey that if you explain to people ahead of time, I don't think they'd go through the process. But it's funny, we don't explain that very often. We don't explain that the fourth step is going to end up being on the 9th step. And by the time it happens, there's enough change and enough growth that it seems okay. It is... Explain that in some church. I don't mean to demean church. But the gift that we have is we are problem people. The relationship we have is in our problems. And our problems were so profound to get us here, we can't pretend that we're now no longer sinners. So we just can't. No one would accept that kind of arrogance in the program because of our own personal experience. So we have a depth of relationship that I think you just don't have very many other places, you know. And it's a great strength. And now, after 8 and 9, or after 10, thank you, we are looking at prayer and meditation. Prayer, doesn't change God, it changes the prayer. There is something about who I am in prayer that I'm just different than any other place that I am. There's something who I am, and I have to be careful. I want to say mindset in my prayer. But I don't want my mind in prayer. I want maybe intuition in prayer. Maybe there's a type of honesty, there's a type of sincerity that I bring to the process that changes me when I'm in the process. And it's a state of holiness that I do think that the process of, as Thomas Merton says, I believe that my trying to find you pleases you. I don't always succeed in that process, but I believe that my effort to do so pleases you. Meditation. So I want to talk a little, do two things. This is going to seem a little odd. I'm going to tell you what I do for my 11-step practice. I don't do this very often. I read 25 meditation books a day. Now, I'm an old man, and I have, and the meditation books are only one-pagers. It takes about 30 minutes to go through. I have them on my iPad, and I bring them. I used to bring a collection of books. But I have 1,000 books on my iPad, but I have 25 or 30 meditation books. They are Buddhist, they are Christian, they are AA, they are of every kind of ilk. I used to have one or two, and when I would read one or two, I would do it to get them out of the way. There is something in the process is long enough for me now and deep enough for me now and coming at me from different ways that somewhere in the middle of it, it catches me. Very seldom do I ever go through the complete process of reading the 25 books that I don't get engaged. And it is a good way for me to start today. I go to a Zoom meeting every day, usually at 7 o'clock in the morning. My time, when I'm in Mexico, I have to get up at 4:30 to go to, it's at 5 o'clock in Mexico. Or I guess now it's at 6. So I do my readings. I go to an AA meeting. And then I go walk 3 to 4 miles. And what a way to start my day. What a privilege. As they say, I'm an old guy. I don't have to work. I don't have the restrictions that many people have in their life. And Linda and I sleep in separate bedrooms much of the time, but when we're together, we go through that meditation together, which is a delightful experience to share. It is, and my meditate, or excuse me, I didn't bring up the fact that I also meditate. I was trained in meditation by a guy who's a Swami in India, a very formal Raja Yoga sort of thing. Over the years, my practice has been up and down. I've always wanted to be a guy who had a very regular, very well-developed, very sophisticated practice, and I never quite got there. About 4 years, or 3 or 4 years ago, I got on Insight Timer, which is a timer that many people probably in this room use to time their meditations. Well, in Insight Timer, which is an app on a telephone, it's got a little brass bowl, Buddha bowl, they have what's the verbal meditation? Guided meditation. I found one by a guy by the name of David G. D-A-V-I-D-J-I. David G. And the meditation is a 23-minute meditation on deep healing. And it is, he even recommends that you do it lying down. So I started to do it when I went to bed. And he takes you through a guided meditation. The first 3 or 4 minutes is kind of like an advertisement, and I usually try to start it. If you pay about $20 more, you can move the deal where you start it. And he does a body scan, a relaxation meditation, up and down your body, down and up your body. And then he does some affirmations and finishes it. And he promises that if you do it 8 weeks in a row, 56 days, you will be changed. That's been measured in some way. I don't know if that's true, but I can tell you that I think I am kinder, more patient. I used to think patience was a form of depression disguised as a virtue. But it is. So one of the ways, I think I pretty much stopped digging the hole. I can't deny when I mistreat someone, and I can't deny when I'm off the reservation. It just, you've gotten me at a level of sensitivity, and I still can be a jerk. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't happen very often. I'm at my worst in lines and on automated telephone calls. My wife will find me screaming into the phone and bring her adult presence into that process. But it has changed me without intent, without me doing anything other than I don't think I've missed 10 days in the last 3 years. It is just, regardless of how tired I am, I just do it. And the biggest problem I have with my readings and with the thing of the few days I miss is when I'm traveling. It just kind of upsets the schedule and everything. There is something that happens to us in the training of... So what we're doing is developing a practice. And it's a practice like, I don't know, being training to be a marathoner. It's a practice. It's just something that I do daily. It is, what happens to the program is eventually the program becomes part of us, and the program starts to do us rather than us do the program. The principles are just present, and they become our operating system. And when I look around at the people that I have the privilege to share my life with, they're just good people. They're just doing the deal. They do it everywhere. They do it at home. They do it at work. They do it perfect. Nope. Don't have to be perfect to be on my list. But you have to be serious. You have to be in the game. And it's magnificent. This room... This is not an easy deal to show up and spend, you know, a few hundred dollars and travel 700 miles. And this morning I went down and there were 20 women with Polly around a table. And I thought she wouldn't even have to open her mouth. She could get those 20 women up on the stage and just be with them for a couple of minutes and let us see that crowd, that sponsor, that sponsees. It's just magnificent what I see happening at the different levels. So what do we have to do with 10, 11, and 12 is love and forgive. Okay. Inventory. Be able to have the courage to go to the places that scare you. There are people in this audience, of which I was one for a long, long time, with problems that if I didn't change, I was going to lose my marriage. If I didn't change, I was going to lose my career. If I didn't change, I was going to go bankrupt. If I didn't change, I was going to lose the affection and relationship of my children. And I didn't know what to do. In AA, going to 5 meetings a week, 7 years sober, 6 years sober. And that was my initiation. That got me to a point where I was able to, when Bill wrote the 12 and 12 and said he saw suffering and depression and he wanted to broaden and deepen the relationship of the people in the fellowship with the steps. That's what happened to me at 8 years of sobriety. When I went through those steps, no more conditions, no more lies, no more minimization, no more, I was ready, I believe, to do whatever I needed to do in that process. And I had good sponsorship the entire way and good leadership. And thank God. I needed to man up and I needed to become more mature. I needed to have a larger container, not a 23-year-old container. Nothing wrong with a 23-year-old container, but mine, I was sophisticated but immature. I had the words, but not the depth. And they came together at 8 years. And since that time, there's only been kind of one thing to do, stay in the game. Just be a player. Just and the ability to be in front of life as life is. What a privilege. I mean, I'm from a large family. When I said, you know, I'm one of seven kids, my parents had 21 grandchildren, my uncle had 22 grandchildren. When I look around, some of the upset in a large family, they don't have inventory, you know. They don't, I mean, the tools that we are given to deal with reality are a treasure. And I think that there are an awful lot of us that, so 8 and 9 are vital and important. Do not dismiss the benefit of 8 and 9. The incompletion of 8 and 9 causes more mischief for us as we go on in our lives, maybe than anything else. And the forgiveness element of that, the two-way forgiveness, that door, is absolutely critical. But 10 and 11, and of course 12, which Ralph is going to do, are the ongoing practice of those things. Do not exempt ourselves from meditation. No one does it well. That idea that when I try to meditate, I'm crazy. If you don't meditate, you have that craziness, you have that noise in your head, you have that internal dialogue, and we are not dealing with it. What you have allowed me to do is to turn down the volume on my internal dialogue. And today it is like an errant child. Okay, today when it adds the story to my experience, I can dismiss it. Thank you for sharing. You know, it no longer defines the experience that I'm in. The story that I add to my experience does not define the experience I'm in most of the time. Thank you for my life.